1290. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon and Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Sholay J. Hungier.
Hi, how are you?
How did I do?
Pretty good, not bad.
Not bad,
but,
not bad.
We could just go by Sholay.
Yeah, well, I'm going to practice. Yeah. I'm going to get this.
That's fine. Jahangir.
Yeah. So what are you doing here?
Well, I was invited to be a part of your show to talk about education, my life's passion, and something I believe our community is a strong advocate for. So.
I know, and you are a member of the Goleta Union School Board of Trustees.
Yes, I was brought into office in 2016, so this is my second year of service on the Goleta Union School District.
You weren't brought into office, you won an election.
Yes, but I like to say that I was brought by my community to the role then brought into the office.
So, what inspired you to join the school board? It seems like it's, unless you like meetings.
Yeah, you have to be patient. But I really, it's a culmination of my life's work that has led me to this place. I was born into a family that just believed education was the ultimate equalizer, and it was promoted from a childhood. And I was able to be a teacher in my early years. And when I had my own children and I was back in the Goleta schools, I realized that I had an opinion on everything. And I had a wonderful mentor and principal who said, you know, you really need to do something with this. You have a voice, you have a passion, and you could do a lot of service. And she said, go for it, run for school board. And I said, that is crazy. Nobody just runs for school board. And she said, no, service is about believing in the impossible. And I think you really see the big picture. And so I ran, and I've been on the board for 2 years, and it has been the most transformative and empowering experience for me and my community, I believe.
What does the school board do?
A school board is kind of interesting. I call it the pyramid. So you've at the base of the pyramid, you've got the students, the family, the community. Above them, you've got your staff, teacher, principal. Above them, you've got your superintendent and all your assistant supes. And above that, you have the school board. So we are really the oversight, legislation, budget, vision, and mission of a school district. Our role is to help legislate the direction in which we believe the community is asking us to bring to our schools.
So it's not micromanaging. It's basically setting policy.
Policy, budgets, LCAPs, looking at your mission and vision, your curriculum, advocacy. And then there's those moments where we're doing the tough work, which is the hiring and firing of a superintendent or, you know, dismissals and stuff of employees or students. But really the bulk of the work is setting the vision. Where is our students and curriculum, the technology needed, the funding finding, that stuff. So, yeah.
Every 2 years, there's an international survey of, I guess, almost every country where they fit in terms of education. And in the last few years, America has always been like 32 or 33 or 34, which is really discouraging for a country like ours. And there are so many views as to what we could do to better our education. And no one seems to have an idea. We you know, we have great technology. We have space, another spaceship just landed on Mars, and we're still trying to figure out how to educate people.
Absolutely. I think we can look to Finland, the world's leader in education, and actually GSD has a teacher who's on Fulbright there studying this year. Hopefully we bring back some of her excellent knowledge to our district.
Hopefully she speaks Finnish. It would be very helpful.
It probably would be, but I also know that they're so worldly, they also speak English over there. Yeah. And I think if you look at the way the model's working, I think we have to look at education as not a hand-me. We look at it as a social injustice. We punish teachers who don't perform. We don't make buildings that are adequate. We put more money into prisons than into our public school system.
Let's just step back. You say teachers who don't perform. I mean, that in itself is a question. What is performing?
Exactly. So who makes the standard, and how do we know? It's not one person who educates. It's a community that educates. It goes from teachers to staff to principals to your superintendent to your school board to the government of your state that says funding is a priority. These programs are a priority. It's really hard for me to say one person is accountable for the entire system. It doesn't work that way. It's a collaboration, an intertwined fabric. And if part of that fabric has a hole and we say this doesn't have as much value as our prison systems or our defense system, we cannot produce the way we want to in the rest of the world. You have to make education the forefront, and you cannot look at public education as something that isn't a priority. It has to be our first priority. Educating the whole body, the whole mind, the whole child, a community, is a process that will elevate people out of poverty, give opportunity. And so it requires advocacy at the highest level. And
which is why in this country we pay our teachers more than anyone else.
Absolutely.
The teachers make more money than investment bankers.
Absolutely.
I mean, people
value teachers. The Mercedes Benz and live in the penthouses. Right. But unfortunately, no, teachers pull out of their own pockets to make sure their kids have the resources if they can't get them from their school boards. And I think that is a crime on so many levels. And we can look at other states other than California, but there are states where you see teachers having to take a second job because the wage is not accurate. And here's the thing. If you value and hold your teachers to an esteem and pride, in Finland, teachers are considered really, really important people of the community. They're given such respect and dignity. Education's given respect and dignity. And I think we're on a movement to realize if you want change in this country, you have to put the information and the priority and the respect where it's due. And that's why I'm on the school board. I believe our educators are remarkable people. They do a task that requires not only patience, intellect, but love. Because I think we all can sit in this room and say we have somebody we remember who just believed in us, who you have your favorite elementary school teacher or your high school teacher or even your college professor who said, you know.
Yeah. But what I had besides good teachers, I had a parent, two parents that really pushed me.
Yeah.
This is a community that's pretty diverse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I mean by diverse is it has a single parents who don't really value education because they didn't have it themselves. They don't have the support system that some
Absolutely.
Of us had. We're lucky enough to have.
I think it's a really big statement. We are in a community that has the highest wealth and the highest level of poverty. And we're second in poverty in this county. Families living in multiple people, like homelessness is pretty high. I mean, we define homelessness in a broad stroke. It's not that you don't have a home. You may have multiple people living in a home where no space to be able to do your homework. So we have a disparity of wealth. And also, I would say that most families have to have both parents working or single homes where they're working two jobs. And I actually would like to argue that I don't think they don't care about education. They've just never had the opportunity to see the power of education because it wasn't presented to them.
Well, but whatever the reason is, the kids don't get the same type. I don't think they get the same type of help at home that I did. And
absolutely.
You know, I don't know how it takes a village. It's an old line, but it's true. And if the kid comes home to an empty house and is playing video games and there's no one there to answer questions about homework, or no one is really telling the child, this is really good that you're doing your homework. To me, it's so much more difficult today, given the family issues that happen.
I think what we're seeing now is a shift to how does the school system become a support network on a larger scale than just educating the child from 8:20 to 3 o'clock. What we're doing in Goleta is pretty amazing. We've got so many wonderful partner alliances with IVYP and the Bauer Foundation and the Goleta Education Foundation, where we're creating after-school programs that help support the students with academic needs, backpacks, clothing, food. If you're hungry and you're home life is not stable, how can you learn? What are you asking a child to do? Overcome trauma. And in Goleta, we've made it a priority to be really on the forefront of social-emotional learning, and we have staffed every school with a full-time psychologist, and we have put funds towards the Second Step program, and that is a social-emotional curriculum where we are talking about a broad stroke of really important life lessons, such as how do we deal with bullying? How do we deal with body image? How do we deal with compassion and empathy? How do we deal with trauma? And I'm really proud of the work we're doing in GLEADA because Amanda Fox, our psychologist, was just given the award of GLEADA's Finest this year for the work she's doing with our students. And as a board member, it is my highest priority that it's not just educating, but making sure the social emotional well-being of every student in my district is being met. And having these partnership alliances are powerful because we can provide so much more resources when you can't have a parent be there at 3 o'clock to pick them up. We have an after-school program. And in that after-school program, it's not just, we don't consider it babysitting. We can consider it a large enrichment program where you get exposure to support and homework, a nutritious snack, outdoor play, game interaction, homework support. It's about bringing in your multiple resources to fill in the gaps and realizing that those who are blessed with so much can turn around and say, how can I help? How can I pass this forward? That's what I think about every night. I say to my children, I have two of you permanently, but I have 3,500 I keep with me every single day. When I'm out there, I keep them with me. I'm advocating. I'm looking for opportunity because one of them is going to make it through this difficult time because there's a bunch of people fighting for them.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafon's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafon and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Sholeh Jahangir, a Goleta Union School Board trustee. And before the break, we were talking about social-emotional intelligence, which is one of the most important parts of the AHA programs. And even before I knew about AHA, I was convinced, and I didn't know the word social-emotional intelligence, but I saw, as I grew up, people very much more academically qualified than I was, but I did better than they did sometimes in life because social-emotional skills are as important as education. So here's my question to you. You and I can agree that social-emotional learning is really important, but do you get sometimes pushback from parents saying, why aren't we just spending more time on math and science and English? What is all this, you know, feely-touchy stuff? Does that really help?
Surprisingly, I thought we were going to get more of that, but I actually believe that our population is seeing the benefit of this curriculum of discussion. It's really psychology at its best, right? We've had the greatest minds working on this discussion on how do we create a society that has empathy, has the ability to process through conflict. Violence begets violence. We all know that. You hit me, I'll hit you back. That doesn't solve anything. Bullying without any kind of tool to say, why are you doing that to me? So I have actually found parents wanting the parental guidebook to the social-emotional curriculum saying, how can I use some of this stuff at home? It's really powerful tools. My kid's coming home and asking for dialogue and restorative justice. And they're talking about, like you said, friendship circles where they get together and they talk about what happened. Why did that incident harm me? And how does it impact me? And when you keep doing it to me, what does it do to you as a person, also the person who's perpetrating the act? So I think in life skills, these are the ones we carry forward even into our careers. You're going to work with a group of people that are diverse and you have to problem solve. And if you look at our current tech industry, look at the way they reset up the way people work. Nobody works in a cubicle anymore. They work in teams. Part of working in a team is collaboration. Part of collaboration is clear and open communication and respect and empathy for each other's ideas. It's not top down, but it's embracing this idea that we have to think and work differently to solve problems. So what we're telling our young kids is, let's start early. Let's look at each other as human beings with same dignity, same voice, same rights, and talk about what's bothering us and what we need. And then identifying those who need some extra support. And trauma can cause needs of extra support, psychological, mental issues that are starting to fester. Let's talk about technology and the isolation that we're starting to see with kids being glued to the social media and the perfect image of life that is not real, we all know. I can Photoshop any picture. I can show you my perfect grassy green area, and it's not my life. But if I'm somebody who's already feeling doubt and insecurity and I'm watching this and saying, gosh, I wish that was my life, it further isolates you from your peers, your reality. So I think that, no, I have not seen that much pushback. I've actually seen people really hungry for this knowledge. They're tired of the same old not working. And, you know, I'd love to see incarceration rates go down, and the way we teach people to not do violent crimes and hurt each other is to hear each other. I always say this. It's the three mandates of my life. You must have a voice. You must have hope. And you must have purpose. And if you silence any of those three, you create a very angry individual.
You know what's really unfortunate is that the current administration is in a sense pushing back against what we're trying to teach the kids.
Absolutely.
And it's very difficult, I would imagine, today to teach emotional intelligence to kids who turn on the television set and see the leader of the country, you know, getting into a brawl about with peers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I wonder if that is not just frustrating for those of us that are on the other side of the aisle, but also for kids who are trying to learn how to grow up.
I think so. We noticed right after the elections that within the first 6 months, 7 months, we were seeing mimicking behaviors on the playground. We were seeing rises in the nation of incidents of bullying and social bullying and this petty behavior. And we as educators and those in the public who believe in a moral consciousness had to step up and say, this is not acceptable behavior. And that the way we treat others is a reflection of how we see ourselves in the world. And in my own home, I have two young boys I'm raising, and I'm not raising them to belittle others and treat them with disrespect, but rather see others as a part of their community and to advocate for them and care for them. And it's going to take a nonstop wave of us saying over and over again that this is unacceptable. Hold people accountable to behavior that is is meaningless and rude and disrespectful. And all human beings have the right to grow and thrive in positive environments. And we as adults have to mirror what we expect of our leaders and our children and our peers. You know, it's been a journey.
Is restorative justice actually used in the schools?
Absolutely. I have been witness to many schools doing some really amazing work where if a conflict comes to be, that I've seen teachers pull out their curriculum, which gives them some guided tools, and they sit in circles together and they or one-on-one with the individuals who had the conflict and dialogue, help using I statements, how it affects them. Not only that, how can we have harmed another individual, but how do we then turn around and come back and say, I would like to make right by this? And there's steps you can take to make right, because you have to hear the other person and say, what did my harm do to you as a person? What did I leave an imprint or how can I undo the act I did? And so I have seen some pretty powerful work. I also have seen kids have a vocabulary to work with, which is powerful. Words and communication give us abilities to feel heard and respected. And it's, you know, I think that old saying, which I think is such a funny one, sticks and stones might break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And that's not true. It's probably easier to heal from a broken bone than to have the trauma of words on you. Because when you're called a name your whole life, maybe you had to wear glasses and someone called you four eyes, or you were overweight and they called you fat, you identify that image of you for a very long time. So words are powerful, and we must give them the tools and the words that provide access to strength and self-confidence.
But restorative justice requires an understanding on the part of the teacher.
Absolutely.
To understand how to do it. So is there a program at the Goleta school system to guide the teachers
Absolutely.
Through this process?
We have funded and implemented our second step, which is part of this program. It's a big package from K through 6. I think there is a second level that we don't have junior high and high schools in Goleta, but there is. And it's a training program, which we've trained all our staff on with our psychologist support. It comes with practice materials. And our staff has been trained to do this with the support of our psychologists and our assistant superintendent.
And I guess you don't have junior highs or high schools, so all the kids, when they get out of sixth grade, have to go to work. I'm joking.
You know, no, exactly. Actually, Santa Barbara School District has embraced some of their own programs, which will continue the work. I know that they're looking at surveys that help us identify students that are showing signs of emotional distress and campuses with no tolerance to certain behaviors. And I know that they're continuing the work.
AHAR is working with all the schools to try to help the teachers, you know, how to train them. You're listening to AHAR Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton, and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa, and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Sholei Jehangir, Goleta Union School Board Trustee. I'm getting closer, or maybe not. We're talking about, what I just said, creating social harmony. Is there social harmony? You know, we talk about the disparity in income. This is like two different economic groups in Santa Barbara and Goleta. Is there friction? I mean, do the kids sense there's a difference? Do we have issues about inclusivity? And do kids go home with those kids who don't have as much as the kids who go home with other kids? I mean, how integrated is the system?
That's a really good question, because parity and equity are a big fundamental factor in this. And the reality is that, no, we don't have parity in homes. We don't have equity in homes. But how do we create parity and equity in the school system, where we give every school and child access to the same materials and knowledge? And how do we create classrooms that are inclusive, and that we don't see lines because of what you have or what you look like, but rather creating relationships? And I believe we have made some major strides in creating more interactive, inclusive relationships in the classroom through our systems of learning, through our peer grouping, and through promoting environments like that. But we've always got room to go. And then we've got the educational learning gap, which we still need to close, because we have a huge English language learner population who are coming here trying to improve their language skills and be able to integrate into the bigger picture. And we've got a society that is mixed on how they feel about language and learning languages. And in Goleta, we're really looking forward to the future of saying, bilingualism is important, and we want our students to be multilingual. And how can we create environments where we promote and support that and not see it as a disadvantage? And we're looking to the future as potentially having dual immersion schools where you're learning both Spanish and English at the same time for both our non-native speakers and our native speakers, so that everybody is growing together. Cultural proficiency, and that's, we talk a lot about cultural proficiency. I may not come from the same place, eat the same food, and speak the same language, but I am human, and you are human. I would love to share and learn from each other. Unfortunately, we are in an administration that sees the other as the other, and we name it as other, versus saying, you may be a little bit different from your culturally from me, or your faith, or your food, or your language, but we can grow and have a mutual respect for each other. So it's fostering that in the school systems, and also promoting integrated programs where we ask each other about each other and we don't segregate each other. And by far, I've seen kids are pretty resilient. They're pretty amazing. You go on the playground and they want to play. You bring a ball out, they're going to play basketball. You have hopscotch, they're going to play hopscotch. I'm really fortunate to be able to be a part of the PTA, too, at both La Colina and Foothill School. And one of my really proudest moments was working at Foothill to create a game club where we were looking to include kids who find recess to be a really stressful experience, socially, emotionally, feeling connected to meet other kids. And we brought old-fashioned board games, checkers and Monopoly, and we played at lunch. And I thought it would be wonderful if I could get three kids to show up. Well, sometimes I would have up to 80 kids playing and teaching each other and creating their own games. And there was a joy in learning, I had kids saying, "What is checkers?" I almost fell over. But I realized that they are doing different kinds of games with technology, and that an old-fashioned board game was such a novelty. So including people, no exclusion. We had rules with that club, whereas everybody's included. Everybody is part of the group. No one is left behind. And people were respectful of that. And I have to say that was one of my dearest moments in my life, to see this bond between kids who normally a sixth grader playing with a second grader because he wanted to learn what the second grader knew how to play checkers. And I think that's how it mirrors real society. I learn from all kinds of different people in what I do. And the best that I've taken in society has been from watching and observing and listening and engaging all kinds of diverse people and thoughts.
There's a little controversy about this subject in today's newspapers, and that has to do with Just Communities and the Santa Barbara School District's retention of them to have diversity training, and there's some pushback.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because if it weren't so emotionally loaded, in the pushback, there's some real learning opportunities.
Absolutely.
What do you think of that whole controversy?
Well, I have to be candid that I haven't been able to read fully up on it, but what I did get in the small synopsis was a fear that in one line I read that it was anti-Caucasian and anti-Christian. And I don't believe the diversity training that they are putting forth is that at all. It's actually an inclusive program trying to include the history and experiences of people from different perspectives. You have to realize we live in a very multicultural land that has had a history that is complex and diverse and yet at times dark and bright. We have been the beacon of hope and we have been the illustration of what not to do at times. And I really believe if you really get to the root of what this learning is, it's about cultural understanding of we all went through a time period. We could talk about World War II. What was it like to be Asian American at that time? What was it like to be Hispanic at that time? What was it like to be African American? We all had an event. We all go through it differently. They're teaching a understanding of history and life through the lens of multi-racial ethnic genders. I have to tell you, sometimes when I read something and I read it through the lens of a female experience, I'm overtaken. I am emotional because I realize I've always heard it through the lens of a male. And when I heard it through the lens of a female and how it impacted her, it was profound. And I don't think what this study is to punish a group of people or say that one ethnicity is better than another. It's trying to teach through the lens of multiculturalism. And the world is multicultural. We have every kind of person, every kind of racial, ethnic, gender identity out there. And if we want to progress as a society, we have to be much more aware.
Okay, so playing devil's advocate, what would you say to a parent that says, look, I appreciate what you're saying, but it's my child, and I want you to teach them academics, and I want you to teach them as much as possible about what it's like to be part of the world, but I don't want you teaching them anything to do with a belief system, a cultural belief system or religious belief system that my family believes in. You're going too far.
I totally think that there's two statements in there that I want to correct. One, there is nothing non-academic about teaching people about the history and the psychology and it's a whole major in college, sociology of a people. I understand the religious respect. And I don't actually think this is a religious course, or even they will briefly probably touch on historically groups of people who've been maybe persecuted or the lens of why that event happened. But to say that we can't say another religion exists would to say that I go through life with blinders on. Don't you work with people who are of different faiths or of different ethnic backgrounds who speak different languages and eat different food? We cannot isolate ourselves, and you cannot be culturally proficient if you do not learn about other people's experience. You cannot be empathetic if you do not hear the story. It's like saying, I don't want your history to exist. It's not right. What we're trying to say as educators is, let's look through history, through current events, through all kinds of academic environments at the impact of our history on these groups.
But, you know, again, and I'm just saying the other side so we can have a discussion.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
You know, one of the things, you know, on the front page of today's Santa Barbara News Press, they have a very interesting graph. And it talks about, I think they got it from Just Communities. It has three columns. And then it has it doesn't say oppressor and oppressed, but that's sort of the implication. And it has one on the left-hand side
rich people, on the other hand, people who are not rich, people who are Christian, people who are not Christian. You know, the people in the left-hand part of that column may feel that this is something that is going to make their child feel bad if they happen to be part of that left-hand column. So whenever you talk about social issues that relate to the person's belief system, I think if you're on a school board, it's an area that is rife with possible controversy.
Absolutely. I think anytime you talk about things that are very personal or fundamental value systems for people, you are going to evoke emotion and concern. And I really tell everybody, educate yourself on the curriculum. School boards spend many, many countless hours, years picking curriculum. They study it. They pilot it. It's not just pulled out of the air. They will look to universities and top researchers for the best that they can find, especially in our county. We have the highest level of competency and educated professionals doing their job to find the most suitable materials for the subject. So I educate yourself on the material. And if you have a real concern that is truly valid and it's present in the material that's going to be in the curriculum and the syllabus, that's when you go to your school board and say, this is my concern. And that's when we start having a dialogue. But we haven't even gotten there with this. They haven't even seen a copy of the curriculum. I think this is internal fear. And here's another thing. You're addressing collective guilt. If you're saying you don't want your child to feel bad, you assume your child's going to feel bad. It's really your collective guilt on maybe my ancestors or maybe I have participated in a policy that has enabled my benefit, but not everybody else's.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a 4-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a 4-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Sholay Jahangir.
Awesome. We're there.
All right. All right. From the a trustee from the Goleta Union School Board. And you know, we're talking about a whole array of areas that, you know, affect our kids. And I guess one of the things that is the elephant in the room is when I was a kid, I was worried about Cuba bombing us, Russia bombing us, and we had to hide under the desk because that would protect us from an atom bomb. Today, all the kids are given I guess, instructions about active shooters. How do the kids deal with that? The whole issue of safety in the school system.
It is a tragic turn in our society that we have now to teach our children how to prepare for active shooters. It's something I grapple with daily in my process. But our school board has taken on a massive program to create a unilateral, equitable security plan for every school. We've brought in the experts from law enforcement, and we've gone through every campus to look at how to create the safest environment, protocols and standards, and then also how do we inform the families and parents on these protocols. We're in the process of developing the final steps of it and implementing it soon, but let's talk about the children. What impact does it have on children? A huge psychological impact. You telling them, go to school, it's a beautiful, safe place of learning, and then you teach them that they have to do lockdown drills because there are people out there that do bad things. And we got to really roll this out to a bigger question. As a society, where is our values? It's so complicated. We've gotten to a point where we can't even talk across the aisle about guns anymore because it's so fundamentally irritating to people. But the reality is this. Where is the line between a child being safe to go to school and the right to own a gun and utilize that gun? And the truth is, I don't think our forefathers ever envisioned semi-automatic weaponry. They saw it as a way to protect themselves from external countries and forces that wanted to take back the land they had just gotten and self-protection, but not mass domestic terrorism. And let's call it what it is, domestic terrorism. When you go into a school and shoot up staff, children, families, you are a domestic terrorist. And we don't call it that because it's too scary and we don't like to label it, but that's what you do. So let's look at the big picture. What do we do in a society that doesn't want to have a conversation about proper gun ownership and maintenance and preventative stuff? We have mental health issues, emotional disturbance, social isolation, drug epidemic, and we have children that are vulnerable. So we as a school board have to look closely on how we create safe school environments, proper procedures and lockdowns and educating the children, and yet not create a culture of fear. My children shouldn't have to go to school every day wondering, should I be afraid? We need to create a safe space, but also a cultural climate where we have to bring in the community to ask the community, what is your buy-in on this? What do you see as a priority? And one thing, if you notice, especially I think you're coming from the East Coast, schools in California are open. And we see them as not only a school, but we also see them as our park and recreation in the afternoons. If you look at our local sports, our fields are completely full of soccer and football and baseball. And for us to turn around and say, we're going to close up our campuses and no longer do you have access, we would have to have the community support on that. And I think what the community is really asking us to do is to look at policies and practices that best suit the balance between a school that is thriving and welcoming and a safe school. And that's this year's long project, is really to create that balance. But like I say to all the parents that come up to me, you are your biggest advocate. If you don't like the way things are going, we must advocate for legislation. We must not reelect people who say, I'll take gun money. We must say that's not acceptable. It's not acceptable. I have our Constitution is beautiful in many ways, but this was one thing I understand. You say I have the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, but I have a right to a gun. So what's my priority? My life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for the right to the gun. But can I have respectful gun ownership? Can I say semi-automatic weaponry is not acceptable and that we should have locked up guns, that you have to have background checks, that are, if you have a record, you're not to have a gun ownership? Let's have these real conversations. If we're worried about social, emotional disturbances, that we don't allow those people to get access to these things. But this is a big picture conversation. And you know, a lot of people say, do you have hope for the future, Sholay? And I say, you know, I am an optimist. Unfortunately, it's in the DNA of who I am, and I do, because those who are suffering at the highest levels are not even at voting age. And they're growing up in this, and they're tired of it. And when they become voters, I believe they will become the kind of voters that say, I'm not going to vote in people who say that the NRA and guns are more important than my life.
But, you know, it's interesting. You know, you talk about community in this
context of guns, but the community is the whole country, and mm-hmm. we do have a difference of opinion in a good part of the country. And one of the fallacies that I think needs to be talked about is the idea that, you know, someone with a good guy with a gun is a good thing. Look at the shooting in Thousand Oaks 2 weeks ago. The police officer that was killed by a horrible accident by another police officer. So the idea that a kindergarten teacher is going to be a better shot than a trained police officer is absurd. So the whole notion that guns in the hands of the good guy is going to protect our killed children is just...
It's a fallacy.
It's a fallacy, it's a really dangerous fallacy.
Absolutely. It's false protection. You cannot say there's a good guy with a gun or a bad guy with a gun because a gun is a weapon designed to take life.
And now look at the other side. I have a friend that lives in Wyoming, and he has a ranch, and he lives almost 45 minutes away from a speeding police officer. It would take about 45 minutes for a police officer to get there. I don't have a problem with him having a gun because he, whether it's animals or whether it's some bad guy, and he's well-educated in guns. I think that you need to have gun laws that are logical with the community. And, you know, in a place like New York or Chicago or Santa Barbara, the idea that having a gun would make you safer is just not borne out by the fact that New York City police officers, which are probably the best trained police officers in the country, are accurate 34% of the time when they shoot. So can you imagine, again, a first grade teacher in a crowded room with shooting going all over the place?
No.
And if elected, I'm not running.
No, but here's the other thing. Like, let's get to the real point. They didn't go into the educating profession to become armed. They went in because they wanted to elevate the mind. We have law enforcement for that. And to ask any individual to take on that role that didn't choose that role initially it's very irresponsible and it's disrespectful. And we don't know in acts of fear how they will respond. Educators are there to elevate the mind, and that is it.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Sholei J. Hung-Ear.
No? I love it. Or just having all kinds of jahangirs.
Oh, good. It's
going
getting
on.
Me excited here.
Yeah.
A trustee from the Glida Union School Board. So one more question about safety. You know, there's an article in, I think it was Newsork yesterday, which is it was on Key News. And that is one of the problems with the school systems in general is because of a lack of money, they haven't been able to upgrade their buildings, and there are fire dangers in some of these buildings. Is there a budget at Glida for actual physical safety, not just guns?
I am so excited you're touching upon this because we, as a school board, this last year and a half, have manifested a strong desire to upgrade our facilities. And we are in the process of an Ed Specs committee that gets together to envision the classroom of the future. And it's taking community input, teacher, principal, student, school board, outside community members, putting together this master plan, which then we are turning it into a facilities master plan and looking for funding within our own budget and external, whether it have to be from grants or bonds, to upgrade the facilities to become the state-of-the-art facilities we're proud of, which means being more green, which means being safer for fire hazards, leaks, upgrading the playgrounds. A lot of playgrounds have gotten very damaged over the years, becoming water wise, making classrooms that are accessible for all needs, accessibility and parity among all our groups of individuals who will be utilizing our campuses. So we're really excited in Glida. This has become our passion project, our baby. We're really fostering this because we see that a good environment to learn in is so productive for everybody. It's wonderful for our educators to have a environment to work in. It's wonderful for the children to be thriving in. We're really looking to the future of what does a classroom need to be dynamic, accessible, productive. You know, the traditional everyone sits in a desk in a row is gone. Mm-hmm. We have alternative learning environments where we have stand-up desks and wobble chairs and moving around in peer groups just as if you were on a tech campus or a college university. Things are different. And I went to school, we sat in rows, and that was uninviting, and you lost my attention at times. Whereas I see our kids when I tour around the campuses, they're moving, they're up and down and engaging and doing science projects in one corner and doing a reading group in another corner, peer editing. We're utilizing the technology provided in a respectful manner where we have access to the iPads or the Chromebooks or TVs that mirror what the teacher's doing in a big scope for those who are having trouble with vision. And so I think this Ed Specs and facility plan is going to be really powerful in guiding our mission and vision forward.
And one of the things that is clearly needed in every classroom is a good teacher. And in the 2 minutes we have left, what makes a good teacher?
It's hours of discussion, but yeah.
But
you now
wasted 10 seconds.
Absolutely. Okay. A good teacher, you have to believe and love humanity. You have to believe that children are our priceless gift. It is the one thing we endow into the future. You have to have a passion for elevating the mind and seeing the curiosity, compassionate. I believe that Santa Barbara County is blessed with some of the finest educators in the nation. And a good teacher is someone who's there, present, and willing to learn with their students. Because I've seen some powerful instruction going on. And a good teacher is somebody who wakes up every day thinking, what can I do to bring this best foot forward for these children? And I have to say, we're very lucky. And I commend everybody that goes into the teaching profession. You are our heroes. You are our future. You are the bedrock of society. Don't let anyone ever tell you you're not that. And so I always say, that's my life's work too, finding and supporting the best in education out there.
And teachers have had so many of the social ills of society thrown upon them. It's like they're the firemen
scapegoat,
and police,
right?
of our young people. And,
absolutely.
And unfortunately, they're not paid as they should be given the value. So you were a great guest.
Thank you. I had a really good time. I hope that we cross paths again.
And I'm from Santa Barbara. You're from Glida, and I understood your accents.
And you didn't sound so foreign to me either.
So this is really, this is what all about, you know, cultural interchange.
Absolutely.
Anyway, terrific. Thank you so much for being on the school board, doing everything that you do. Thank you for being here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll see you next week.